Hi, I'm Susan Harrison and you're listening to Back Row. On today's episode, I talk to controversial filmmaker Edward Strange about his unexpected move into the world of children's literature, Frank Trebilcock gives us his Desert Island Death Disc, and there are more startling revelations about a certain chocolate factory. But first, Hayley Danks and Ruth Goodchild review the entire Edinburgh Fringe.
Hi there, it's Hayley Danks here with Ruth Goodchild.
Hello, nice to be here.
We're excitingly at the Edinburgh Festival.
Here we are.
In all its glory.
Yes.
The rain, the sun, the people, the arts. It's the best place to be.
The snow sometimes.
Sometimes, if you go up far enough. So, yeah, I mean, for those people who don't know, the Edinburgh Fringe is like sort of the biggest artsy type of thing going on in Europe?
England?
Yeah, practically the biggest one in the whole of England.
The biggest one in the whole of England.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, there might be other stuff happening up here with the Commonwealth Games, but frankly, as far as I'm concerned, sport can do one.
Absolutely. Art is where it's at, and we are at art now.
We are at art, we are eating at art, we are drinking at art.
We're breathing art.
Mm.
Art is going in, I'm breathing art out.
That's right. Mm. Osmosis is happening with the art, and out of my mouth comes poetry.
Osmosis.
Osmosis. I love that, Ruth. I love it. So, when did you get here?
I got here last night. I flew. Did you fly?
No, I preferred to get the megabus just to get the full experience.
Sure. Mm. No, I flew Monarch.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, and I would rate it sort of four and a half stars.
Oh, right.
The flight up here. Yeah, it was 20 minutes, so they didn't have time to sort of show anything on board. So that they lost half a star for that.
Oh, basically. That's disappointing.
That's really disappointing, but the food was really nice.
Ironically, it sounds like it was a bit pedestrian.
That's very good.
Thanks, Ruth. So my journey, by contrast, was really exciting. I went by Megabus. Mm. It cost me £9.98, which I thought was a really cute price.
Yeah.
I just thought, oh, that's a really
Not the nine on the end, the eight on the end.
Yeah.
Surprising, right at the last moment.
And when I got on, I actually sat next to a man who was heavily overweight and had quite a strong odour. And I really felt like, I'm really experiencing what it's like to be an artist.
And it's sort of attacking you from all the senses.
Mm.
I'm breathing this journey. Yeah. I'm feeling this journey against my side.
At all times.
Yes.
It was sort of like a journey in the round.
Yes.
As you say,
site-specific journey.
Yes.
Mm, interesting.
And, you know, there was a stench of smoke and body odour from the man. There wasn't much air.
Sure.
At one point, a small child was sick in the toilet.
Right, so there was a toilet.
There was a toilet. Of the, you know, the sort of chemical-y type
chemical
of thing.
Chemical variety, That sort of permeates the rest of the coach.
Exactly. So, you know, when I arrived, I was a total mess. And I really felt, as one would imagine an artist feel, sort of, ooh, my head's all over the place.
Yes.
Am I coming or am I going? I haven't got any money. I felt like that. I mean, I do have money, obviously, but I felt like...
Not on me, exactly. Not sort of metal sort of money.
Yeah. Exactly. So,
So it sort of opened you up for the festival experience right from the word go.
It really did.
Right from Victoria Station onwards.
Right from Victoria Station onwards.
Interesting.
And as I got out at the Scotlandy station, I thought, oh, I've really arrived. I was surrounded by young people with a lot of oversized props and bags.
Yes. You know what I've liked so far about my experience is there aren't many native Edinburgh people here.
Yeah.
Which I don't know, but I sort of think might spoil it somewhat.
Well, you're right, because were they to be introduced into the mix more, one would find it difficult to understand.
Exactly. And I wouldn't understand their art.
No.
Definitely not. Can they produce any? I don't know.
Can they? I mean, the draw is out.
Exactly.
I mean, if you can't understand the language, how can one understand the art?
Yeah, how can one understand the language behind the art?
Yes.
Exactly. So that's been very pleasing. That basically, I bumped into lots of people I know, and they're all just like me. So that's great, number one.
That's been my highlight. Big tick for that.
Now, you are much more familiar with the Edinburgh Festival than I am.
Yes.
It's my first time at the actual festival. I've been to Edinburgh before, but that was to a gallery, and it was in November
a few years ago. You went there on a mini break.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, I saw sort of, it was a pottery exhibition. Mm. That was, you know, that was quite good. But apparently the festival's very different.
It's very different, yeah. Ruth. You're in for an absolutely tremendous shock, and I mean that in the best possible way.
Right, right.
I mean, one cannot move for art up here. I mean, my previous Fringe experience was really, it was a heady days, I like to think of them as.
Sure.
I mingled with the great and the good. I spent a very long time in the Traverse Theatre Bar.
Uh-huh.
And when I stepped out of the Traverse last time, I immediately was met by a piece of street theatre, which was a grubby-looking 20-year-old, let's say, student who invited me in to a sort of structure he had made with cardboard. And I walked through it. It cost me £8, which I thought was a bloody bargain. I walked through the structure and was met by another young man on the other side, weeing against a wall.
How visceral.
That's all it was, Ruth. That's all it was.
It puts you back in touch with what life is all about.
With the start of life.
That's really because
and the end of life.
You know, it's funny.
Expelling.
Exactly. Mm. The beginning, the circle of life, as it were. It's funny you should say that, because as I was walking from the station to my hotel, I saw a man in a cardboard structure.
Really?
And with a sort of, he'd sort of homemade a little sign saying, please help.
That's funny, isn't it?
That's very funny.
Quirky.
Yeah. And I sort of assumed that that wasn't a piece of art, but now... you've explained that, but I'll go back and I'll enjoy that piece of theatre.
Yeah, it may have been part of the same series.
Yes, exactly.
The same group of artists.
Exactly, the same sort of production company, maybe. Interesting. Yeah.
And what do you have on your books to review tomorrow? Because obviously that's when it all kicks off.
Sure. So I'd really like to see, there's a production on at a place called Sweet. And it's just a load of Bolivian women screaming for 8 hours into a plastic bag.
Oh.
Doesn't that sound marvellous?
It sounds amazing. I feel a little... What time did you say that was on?
That starts at 7 a.m.
Yeah.
Is that a clash? It does clash, actually.
That is a clash, a culture clash.
With
I'm actually going to see... It's a show from Edinburgh University students in the devised... theatre, and there's going to be a lot of nudity.
Great.
So, but it's going to be very up close. It's going to be some one-on-one nudity, some group nudity.
It's probably all necessary.
It's more than necessary.
It's vital.
It's the show. Yeah.
It is the show.
The show is
it
called
is show.
A Nude? Question mark.
Nice.
And one is to be seated very low down, apparently, so I've heard. And the performers stand above you and sort of
giving you a new perspective
themselves
up to you in every sense.
In every sense.
Rawness is something I'm always looking for in theatre.
Yeah. And I find that nudity, young student nudity is usually where one finds the raw.
Yeah. Mm. I was thinking of going and seeing The Medic's Review as
you
well.
You must see that.
That, I am assuming, will be very highly amusing.
Yes. I mean, if one can rhyme something with esophagus,
then on to the television with you.
Yes, Sunny Jim. And don't look back. That sounds bloody marvellous.
Amazing. Now, you review a lot of music, don't you, when you're up here?
Well, I like to review a bit of Scottish folk music.
Sure.
This time I'm seeing a fusion piece, which is, mandolin and spoken word.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And the lovely thing is, it's all with a very fakey sort of feel. Almost a lullaby. Some of the melodies they sent me in the press release, just lovely.
Sure.
But it's all on the theme of abuse. So I just think that's really nice to juxtapose that. So an hour exploring abuse.
Just sort of going off to sleep, thinking about themes of abuse and victimisation, cruelty, exactly. What could we find on that?
Well, what could we find, unless one were to find a show a site-specific comedy about human trafficking. I mean, and wow. Let me just let you know that I have two comps to said show for tomorrow.
One for me, please.
Actually, what you need to do to find the real off-the-beaten track is to go to Musselburgh. So just take a bus or a train.
Okay.
This is what I did last time. Go all the way to Musselburgh, and usually there's a very obscure piece in, well, it's called Greg's.
Okay, that's what it's to say
Greg's.
Outside.
Yeah,
Greg's, okay.
I mean, and you can dine while you watch.
Great.
It's just a very scruffy Scottish woman dishing out buns and whatnot. Sandwiches, donuts.
See, I bet you took away so much from that.
Yeah, I did, literally and metaphorically.
Yeah.
I was left with a great deal of sort of feelings of turmoil. I thought, I've given her my money.
Yeah.
She's given me something in return.
Is it worth travelling even further away to find something even more off the beaten track, Newcastle?
I'd recommend Newcastle,
yeah.
And in fact, the accents are quite similar. So if you feel like you've been sort of inducted into the Scots accent, then you'll probably be able to adapt to the one Newcastlian.
Newcastlian.
I don't know if you've noticed, Ruth, but there's quite a lot of posters in the Edinburgh Fringe.
I noticed that. They're not always there.
They're not always there.
Okay.
In fact, it's the Edinburgh Fringe is sort of 10% performance, 90% posters.
Yes.
So if you go into one of the lavatories of any of the bars, theatres, clubs, etc.,
you'll see it plastered.
And you might see a graffito from one rival theatre group to another.
Nice.
Who's,
So, my
Hamlet's better than your Hamlet.
Right. Because I saw a young female stand-up comedian, she just had the word cow just written on her forehead, which I thought was very clever.
Really clever.
Really funny.
It's covering a lot of bases, isn't it?
Sure, yes.
It's sort of saying, we're all cows, aren't we?
We're all cows.
From mammals.
Yes.
Well, we are mammals, I think.
I think so.
Say.
Yeah.
Did you review it?
I'm going to. It's going to be in the Telegraph next week. I've heard tell of the flyering techniques that are used.
Oh, my God. And young people are so imaginative.
Yes.
You're not going to believe this when I tell you, but, sometimes one can see a flyerer lying on the floor.
Good Lord.
Prone. Yeah, I know. It gets weirder.
Really?
And more controversial.
Yeah.
Sometimes they are lying on the floor with the flyer in their mouth. So.
That's incredible. Imagine how much they're playing with form. That blows my mind.
Well, that's exactly what they're doing. They're saying, here's the convention.
Yes.
Screw the convention.
This year is the year that flyering changes.
It's the ambition of the flyers that I really... And some of them, again, we were talking about earlier, the rawness, the boldness of nudity. Sometimes a young woman may be flyering in a corset or a bra.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think it's great when people flyer in character.
Because, it just puts everyone at ease.
Yes.
Including the person doing it.
Exactly. Rather than have someone just boringly tell me what's going on in their show, I get a bit of performance right there, whether I want it or not.
Yeah.
Which I think is great.
It is great. It's imposed upon you.
Super.
Which is what all theatre should be.
Should be imposed upon.
And I think, you can really see the joy that they're getting out of doing it as well. Every day.
Every day.
For a month
at 28 performances.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually staying with 8 crack addicts. In a tenement block, because I just thought,
so that's more exciting.
It's much more exciting. And then sort of in the room next door, there's some students putting on a play, where they're sleeping and eating. I'm staying in the sort of this cupboard. I mean, if there is a sofa.
I'll definitely try that and review it as well.
Okay, great.
Great.
Okay, well, to all those out there thinking about going to Edinburgh Fringe, I would strongly recommend it.
Sure. What would you give it out of 5?
The whole Fringe. Oh, gosh, Ruth. I almost feel like that.
Because this is how it has to be done.
You're right. You're
Everything
right.
has to fit into five stars.
Five. The effort I would give it a five. Because, sure. you know, just talking about those fires a minute ago, I mean, you can't really improve upon that.
No.
Execution, I would give it a three.
Okay.
Say so overall a four.
A four, average out of four. Yeah, yeah it goes on for ages.
Ages.
Too long.
Summer.
Summer. It's on for the whole of the summer.
And there's quite a lot of shows. Okay. Enjoy.
Hello, I'm Kirsty Young and you're listening to Desert Island Death Discs, where we ask our castaways to choose one song that they hate so much they would choose to live on a desert island to avoid hearing it ever again. For rights reasons, we are unable to play the track in full, and also I can't find it on my iTunes, okay? Straight talking, no nonsense, and with an unflinching loyalty to his beloved county, Frank Trebilcock has become a renowned figure throughout Cornwall. A relentless campaigner, Frank is leading the movement to have Cornwall represented in the Eurovision Song Contest as a country in its own right. A man whose plans are as ambitious as his farming techniques, this is his Desert Island Death Disc.
America, Belgium, Cornwall. Yep, the three main contributors to world music. I mean, in many ways, us Cornish invented music when we hollowed out a pasty and blew across the top of it to scare off the pixies down the mines. Ah, the beautiful sounds of the pasty flute. Because of the massive Cornish influence on all songs ever, I think we should be recognised more in the hit parade, if you ask me. And so, my Desert Island Death Disc is Hang the DJ by those Smiths and that Morrissey bloke. I mean, come on, in that song, he mentions a load of places and he has many opportunities to mention some Cornish ones, but he doesn't. He mentions London, he mentions Birmingham, Dublin, Dundee, Umberside. Like, he could have said, oh, there's panic in the arbour down Padstow, Mevagizzy, Gweek, Truro. I mean, the scanning doesn't work, but you get what I mean. And also, he's really miserable, not like us Cornish. I mean, oh, look at me. I've got no one to love me, no job. I've just got some flowers swinging around my head. I'll just have an ice cream and cheer up. And so my Desert Island Death Disc is by the Cornish hating band, The Smiths. And the last thing I'd like to say, I'm going to leave to the lovely sounds of the pasty flute.
Infamous filmmaker Edward Strange has been frightening and sickening audiences for the past 30 years. Some would call him a maverick, others would call him a cunt. I met Mr. Strange at his current bedsit to talk about the startling move he's made into children's literature. Getting on now in years, slightly frail, but still with a perverse glint in his eye and a stench of rotten otter coming from his makeshift kitchen, this was an unsettling experience. Hello, I'm here with Edward Strange. It's such an honour and a slightly frightening privilege to meet you.
Of course it is. Hello.
You don't really do interviews very often.
Not really. It's very difficult to get to the mainland. Most of the time I've spent most of the last 15 years on an oil rig.
I see. Mm. Do you have any family or friends that you live with?
I have a dog. Yes, a dog called Charles. He's lovely, he's caring, he's only got one leg. It's a popular misconception that I am, in fact, a standoffish man just because I live in an oil rig. It's not true. I like people. Mm-hmm. I visit people, shops, newsagents. I don't enjoy speaking. There's the accents. Mm-hmm. It's always difficult. Mm. I mean, I like to think of myself as well-spoken, but of course nowadays it's different. Everyone wants a northern accent or some kind of Newcastle accent, something that puts you at ease. Apparently,
something
I put
regional.
People on edge.
Yeah, well, I mean, it has been said, I suppose, because they associate you with your films, which are incredibly dark. I mean,
truthful.
Yeah, they are kind of literally true, aren't they? There's a lot of actual deaths that happen in your work.
Absolutely, mainly animals. Only ever animals. I've never killed a human being. I've killed several dogs and many, many horses.
Yeah, I mean,
horses are bastards. I mean, if you ask me, effectively, all a horse is a shit donkey.
It's true. I mean, you have celebrated donkeys extensively in your work.
Mm. It's a central theme. Donkey Man, 1 through 5, although not strictly a linear narrative, mm-hmm. I find was probably my most gratifying work, except for obviously the Christ series. But the donkey work was certainly, it made a difference to me. It changed my life.
It did. Mm. Got you talking again.
Mm.
At very using much so. Actual words.
Yes. There was some nasty business with a few charities who... But they died peacefully, most of the animals.
How did you feel when the RSPCA letter-bombed your oil rig?
Well, fortunately, it's a very big structure, so it only took out most of the west side, and frankly, it was a little tacky on that side anyway. I wasn't that affected. To tell the truth, I wasn't surprised. I'd been waiting for that from day one. All the stuff with the otters, I thought that was going to trigger it. Didn't.
People love otters. They're sort of bastards. The sweetest...
Really? No, they're the thieves of the sea.
Oh.
No, I've got no time for them.
Which is why you strung them up.
Mutilated them, really.
Mm-hmm.
But with spoons, it's sort of an art form. I never stabbed them. It was more of a sort of a dry impact. But it looked beautiful on the screen. Beautiful.
It was very moving.
Yeah, well, they were portraying children. If anything, you weren't really sure it was an otter underneath the bonnet.
That's true.
And it brought something new to Austin's work.
Have you ever thought about taking your work to stage?
I have no interest in stage. No interest in stage. I can't get insured.
Oh, okay. That's a shame, because I know that Andrew Lloyd Webber was quite intrigued by your work, and he was interested in bringing... the Christ.
Well, Andrew and I have a very complicated history. We were lovers throughout most of the 1980s. It was a dark time for me. He's not a very giving lover. He is notoriously erotic, but he just couldn't give himself over to me, and that's why it ended.
Oh, I didn't know that was why.
Well, he left me on Christmas Eve. It's well documented.
Did he used to insist on wearing the full cat's makeup?
And bodysuits. And I could understand the makeup. But a man that size and that much lycra, I mean, outside of a wrestling ring, there's no place for it. And he was, of course, obsessed with cage fighting.
Really?
And I was a cage fighting widow. Every Friday, you'd want to come down and you know, you're dating a beautiful man like Andrew Lloyd Webber. You come back, he's not there, he's watching the bloody cage fighting, so we broke it off.
I have sat through your donkey, would you call it a series?
I like to think of them as tragic musicals, really, because I mean, in the end it sounds a lot like music. And
the screams.
Well, yes. Are they screams, though?
Well, I don't know. To be honest, I couldn't listen to all of it.
No.
I was sick several times.
Yes. I put myself through it. But it's the truth of it. That's why I do it. It challenges. I mean, do you really want to go and watch another Josh Hartnett movie? Or do you want to come and watch me make a donkey jump through a flaming hoop 8 times in a row? Because of what it says about corporate Britain.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know this, but Josh Hartnett's actually a big fan of yours.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear God. I've met him once.
Oh, yeah?
I've met him once, yes. I stood behind him on an escalator repeatedly shouting his name. I was asked to leave, but I really don't like Josh Hartnett at all.
So you mentioned your Christ series. It was not actually a series, was it? I think I'm using the wrong terminology there.
There are 6 films. It's a cycle, really. It's a cycle. I mean, it's a beautiful series of films. It was shot entirely in Norway with a Chinese actor portraying Jesus Christ. He had no arms, no legs. It was truth. And it was real time. Real time. The only real time depiction of a crucifixion in film history. I'm proud of that. It's my vision.
What makes a person do that? What was your childhood like? Did you have a happy childhood?
I was drunk a lot of it, I must admit. I discovered that if you do ferment cowslip, then you get quite a powerful, potent alcohol. And I spent my youth with really a lot of bad people. A lot of bad people, you know. Morris dancers.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't nice. I got quite into Morris dancing.
Really?
Yes, I was superb. I wanted to represent Belize, but it turns out I had no link whatsoever to Belize, so they did not let me in. It was one of my greatest, earliest disappointments, was not being able to represent Belize
I'm sorry
as a Morris dancer at the highest level.
I mean, you can see the kind of Morris dancing motifs in some of your later work.
Well, I made a documentary about a Morris dancer. He was insane and he was portrayed by a dog, but it was a moving film. It was a moving film.
How did you tutor that dog?
Mainly through treats. Mm-hmm. I spoke to him at length. I lived with him for 3 months. Actually, it was lovely. We had a little bedsit in Aldershot. It was a fabulous life. I mean, it was a platonic relationship, I hasten to add. We'd chat. He used to talk to me for hours.
What sort of stuff did he like talking about?
Well, he used to talk about the weather mainly. Mm. But he stared out the window a lot. And, he was quite obsessed. But
obsessed with the rain?
Yes, obsessed with the rain. And the way he scratched at that door, he hated wood. Mm.
How many times would you say you took him for a walk? How many times did you take him for a walk?
A walk?
Outside in the rain?
Oh, no, we didn't go outside. No, it was just us. We were just brothers. And I did teach him Morris dancing. In many ways he was better than me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very good, well in my way.
Have you ever thought about, did you ever think at the time about bringing him on Britain's Got Talent?
I don't like talent shows. I don't like them at all. Simon Cowell is a deeply sinister man.
Am I right in thinking you and Simon Cowell are, what, third cousins?
We are. Twice removed? Yes. We spent a lot of time together in our youth. Mm. We used to throw knives, at a tree, like you do in the country. I mean, it was a very quiet... We lived in Dorset, on the coast. It was a lovely area, pool.
With all of your cousins?
Yes, with all of our cousins. It was a very deprived area, pool. And we used to throw knives at trees.
Really?
Mainly. Drink petrol.
Was he a good knife thrower?
No, he was terrible. He was absolutely terrible. He used to sing. He used to weep. And often he would just scream at people for no good reason. So in many ways he hasn't changed.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. While knife throwing, he would sing and weep.
Yes, a lot of the time. I mean, I did often wonder if it was performance art, but no. He was just very, very upset.
Wow. I mean, it's really intriguing to talk to you. I have, as I said, I've sat through your... Donkey.
I think
film
that makes you the third
series.
Person. They did put it on briefly at the ICA. I think they must have got something wrong with the promotional materials because I was very disappointed with the turnout.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there's so much controversy that surrounds your work. I mean,
well,
I don't, to be totally frank, I'm not sure if I would have sat through it had I not been interviewing you. But I'm glad I did because I've literally never seen anything like it in my entire life and never will again.
I'm frequently told that. I think my love for the subject comes through a lot. Like I say, it's about truth. Life is a very upsetting place, especially if you live somewhere as deprived as Dorset.
Dorset, yeah.
Then you understand the cruelty in life. You really do.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely understand now. I haven't slept for 3 weeks, really.
You're seeing the world as it is. I mean, eventually you watch enough of my stuff, you will weep continually, which is truthful.
Oh,
it's
God.
Truthful.
So, I mean, this is why it's so incredible to me that you're almost reinventing yourself as this extremely dark filmmaker who's now turned to children's books.
Yes,
amazing.
I've always loved children's books. I've written
really?
Since an early age. Yes, a lot of people
since
think,
you were a child
yes,
reading children's
yes,
books.
Yes, I used to write my own. And a lot of people thought that just because I've done a real-time movie about a man with no arms and no legs portraying Jesus Christ, that I'm incapable of writing a children's book. That's quite wrong. It's quite silly.
Yeah.
I mean, I have written a lovely book. It's called Brian the Rabbit.
Yes. Mm. Yes. And so Brian the Rabbit is the protagonist. He's
yes.
the central character.
Yes, he is.
I'm very sorry. I haven't had the chance to read it yet, but what happens to him?
Well, Brian is
a
lovely, innocent rabbit who's mm-hmm. living in the inner city with a small, broken family.
Aww.
Yes, it's very... He befriends the family's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about him developing myxomatosis.
Oh.
Yes. It's very...
In real time?
Absolutely. It's 400 pages long. And it's a truthful book. It's a truthful... I think children will love it. I really want to bring them joy with this.
Where's the joy? I mean, does he recover in the end?
There's a resolution.
Oh, Okay.
He is...
A resurrection?
That would give away the next three books.
Oh, sorry.
So I can't go into detail.
I don't want to offend you, but I can understand why it's been banned in this country, which is why I couldn't get hold of a copy.
If you go to Luxembourg, it's very available. It's very available. In fact, I think it is on sale in Luxembourg in many, many petrol stations. And I'm pleased because I feel that's where you find real literature these days. It's changed a lot. It's not just Michael Bublé CDs. You see it right next to it is Brian the Rabbit. It's quite a thrill when I do go to Luxembourg and see my book there.
Michael Rosen and Jacqueline Wilson have obviously, as you know, formed a sort of
hate group.
Alliance, I was going to say. Mm. But yeah, hate group. I mean, they've very openly said that they wouldn't spit on your book if it was burning.
I don't want them to spit on my book. They probably couldn't spit on my book. It's a very big book.
So where do you see yourself going next? More children's literature?
I see myself as the truthful J.K. Rowling.
Right.
Mm. I mean, that last chapter of Harry Potter was appalling. Absolutely appalling. Happily ever after.
Yeah, I mean, she wasn't happy with your YouTube review. I mean, she called it an assault. A verbal and...
I shouldn't have been allowed to get that close to Daniel Radcliffe. It was an assault, but it was also a criticism.
Is the restraining order still in place?
Very much so, yes.
Okay. Yeah. I just want to say it's been a real interesting
privilege. Do please buy my children's book.
I mean, we can't... Unfortunately, the listeners won't be able to buy it unless they go to Luxembourg,
well,
to the petrol station.
Well, I'm petitioning to get it on Amazon, and I feel technically that should be allowed. It's a simple, charming story. In many ways, it's like Watership Down.
That's true. There's definitely resonances of that. And what's the age range?
Well, I would like it to principally be 8 to 12. The impressionable ages, mm-hmm. Yes. And but I would be open to pitching it, as has been recommended, at the extremely old and infirm. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It's always a pleasure.
You're listening to BBC Radio 4, where we continue our live coverage of the Wonka trial, following the tragic events of the Golden Ticket Tour, which left many dead. Those who've been following the coverage will know that last week we learned that William Wonka, CEO of the Wonka Confectionery Company, was facing charges of manslaughter and child endangerment. But there was also the unusual charge of enslavement of an entire race. Mr. Wonka is known to be a very litigious man, and this case has taken 2 years to reach the courts. We now go over to the courtroom where the prosecution is still making its case.
Okay, if you just take your time.
Okay, sorry, I'm a bit nervous. Myself and my colleague Paul were the first paramedics on the scene. What greeted us was one of the most bizarre scenarios I've ever witnessed. First, we had to enter through a door that was only a few inches high and proceed down a corridor, the walls of which were covered in saliva. One girl had suffered a fall from a great height down a chute intended for eggs that didn't meet the standard required. She survived, God knows how, because she had several broken ribs, one of which had punctured a lung. Another girl had suffered a severe allergic reaction to an untested chewing gum. I mean, what it was even doing within the reach of children is beyond me, but her face was completely blue. There was no attempt to administer first aid before we got there. In fact, some of the employees were just dancing about and singing. I said, you know, stop all of that, give her some air. I said, her tongue's swollen, that's why she's blue. Turned out the chewing gum had gluten in it. Mr. Wonka himself told me that he had sent health forms out to the families beforehand from his own office, but the forms were cut in half lengthwise, so you could only read half the questions, so allergies weren't covered. Not all were success stories. A German lad drowned. His lungs were full of drinking chocolate. It was a horrible sight. I still have nightmares. One lad suffered severe radiation poisoning, which had caused his whole body to shrink. He's holding on, just, but he's in a medically induced coma. We've told his mother that there's really no hope, but she won't listen to reason. I approached Mr. Wonka himself to ask whether they kept stretchers and other emergency first aid at the factory, but he just started reciting poetry. At that point, he seemed quite calm, but then his mood dramatically changed and he started yelling at his staff, like, what are we going to do? We're going to get done. This is all your fault, you little orange bastards. Then he started laughing, then crying. Then he walked off limping, but then he did a forward roll and ran. My understanding is that he was arrested later that afternoon, hiding behind some bins in the next street.
Well,
Well, we'll return to the Wonka trial later this afternoon, when Veruca Salt is due to give evidence from her iron lung. But coming up now on Radio 4, The Archers. In this episode, one of the characters is having problems with one of their fields. Probably, I don't know, I don't listen.
You've been listening to Back Row with me, Susan Harrison, and Gemma Arrowsmith, Sam Thomas and Colin Lego. Join us next time when we'll be reviewing the news in its entirety. Okay, bye! Bye! Bye, see you later, bye!